Welcome back to the Chord podcast for February 2025. I'm the Chord's Arts and Life editor, Nate Dawes, and I'm here with Madeline Mastacci, the Chord's managing editor, who wrote the featured piece for this paper's February edition on the rise of sober curiosity, what makes Gen Z the most sober generation. So, hi, Madeline. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
You're actually one of the most senior people working for the Chord.
Yeah, I've been around for pretty much all 4 years of my undergrad. I started in my first year as just a volunteer, and I was the news intern and the news director, and now in my last year, I'm the managing editor.
So what does the managing editor actually do?
Kind of a lot. Oversees all the sections. So after Bronte's done, our editor-in-chief is done with her edits, she'll send them over to me for another round of edits. I'm connecting with volunteers and getting them sorted into the sections that they want to write to. And I'm also writing myself. So this being my fourth year here, it's pretty good. I get to choose pretty much the section I want to write in. But if a section needs a little bit more help that month, I'll go and write an article for it. And oftentimes I'm the one doing the feature piece for our paper that month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how much time does this take out of your week usually?
The Chord as a whole or just the feature piece?
Oh, the Chord as a whole.
I would say 15, 20 hours, but I like it because I can like scatter those hours throughout my week and mix it in with my school. So it doesn't feel like a traditional like clocking in for a shift because I can do it at any point I want to.
That's fair. What made you want to get involved with the Chord in the first place?
In my first year when I was coming to Laurier, I was really interested in student newspapers. When I was applying to schools, I was looking at which like newspapers they had, what the student life looked like if you joined these newspapers. I was just really into the concept of journalism, and at that point I wanted to be a journalist after university, and the Chord really interested me. When I was applying, and then ultimately I chose Laurier for other reasons. But, I wanted to get involved and see if I liked it. And I thought it was really cool going on campus and, like, seeing something I wrote in the newspaper after.
Yeah. Is there anything that you say you're not necessarily leaning toward journalism anymore? What made you kind of, like, shift away from that?
It was just personal reasons. I was very much like interested in journalism, and it was something I wanted to do after, but then I just kind of took a look at my life and realized that the life that comes with a career in journalism is not necessarily lining up with how I want my life to look. So I've transitioned into teaching, and I'm going to go to Teachers College in the fall.
Yeah. If people don't know, the digital media and journalism course that Laurier offers on the Brantford campus is shut down now. The journalism kind of life is kind of sputtering under the weight of things like fake news and stuff. So, like, it's a very reasonable kind of way to look at this. What is it that keeps you going with the Chord with that in mind?
Yeah, the Chord, like, I just really enjoy it. Ever since my first year, I've just enjoyed, like, interviewing different people on campus and, like, kind of having this, like, second life to my student life. I've been able to connect with a lot of different people that I otherwise wouldn't have connected with. And I also still have that desire to be a journalist and, like, be in that world. And now that I've chosen that I don't necessarily want to do that after my undergrad, I want to finish out my time at the Chord so I can get that satisfaction that I did my journalism portion and now I can move on to something else.
I, for the record, did the exact same kind of thing with wanting to do something like that, but looking at the reality of the situation, the disappointing reality of what media careers look like in the modern day. It's rough, but pivoting to the topic of the interview for today, the piece you wrote, the feature for this month, it's a topic that makes headlines pretty frequently, the kind of like the drinking habits of young people. So you wrote about something called sober curiousness. What is sober curiousness?
So sober curiousness is the act of exploring your relationship with alcohol and considering sobriety, even if you're not fully committed to the idea yet.
Mm-hmm. And where does this come from? Because it's a broader movement.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard just to pinpoint exactly where that started. In my article, I talk about how a book was published, I believe, in 2016, talking about sober curiosity, and then it just kind of took off online after that. A lot of people saw others doing it over social media and thought, what if I did this as well? How would it make me feel? Would I like my life better? And it just kind of took off. And what my article goes into exploring is how it really took off with Gen Z. And though you can't really pinpoint exactly when the sober curious movement started, because I'm sure people in the 70s and 80s were also sober curious, Gen Z has really taken a liking to it. And throughout the article, I talk about how social media is a big factor for that. I interviewed Melise Panetta for it. She's a lecturer of marketing at Laurier. And originally, her story with the conversation called The Rise of Sober Curiosity, Why Gen Z Are Reducing Their Alcohol Consumption, was I was just going to do an article on that. And then Bronte, our editor-in-chief, had said, why don't you turn this into something bigger and do the feature for it? But she co-authored that article, and it really goes into how the sober curiosity boomed on social media, and Gen Z is obviously a big market on social media.
And terminally online, we are.
Yeah. So that it attracted a lot of attention from Gen Z, and even just the growing wellness movement and that trend really, I guess, resonated with Gen Z. And as Panetta said in my interview I had with her, it's looking like the sober curious movement for Gen Z and perhaps maybe the younger generations as well is looking like a trend that's going to continue to grow and not just a fad.
Mm-hmm. Your article references not just that that article with the conversation, but also mentions a couple of studies that have been done by research firms, both for marketing and just for general scientific knowledge. What do you think it is about the topic of young people drinking that concerns society, that makes us want to know more about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I asked my interviewees that same thing, why did you choose this topic? And another person I had interviewed for this article, Noah Friedman from Environics Research, she said that she's Gen Z herself, and just she took an interest to the topic. And her article that I talk about throughout my feature is The Sober Curious Alcohol Trend, What Motivates Gen Z to Reduce Alcohol Consumption? And she just kind of goes into how market research shows how Gen Z, their social values align with a reduction of drinking and a sober curiosity mindset. And it was kind of hard in doing my research for this, because Environics Research is very much stats marketing language, and I don't have a background in that at all. I'm an English major. So they go into something called social values, and Friedman described it as values as some values someone deeply holds and their deeply held beliefs. And the social values that they've allotted through interviews over time with Gen Z go hand in hand with the sober curiosity movement. So Gen Z places an emphasis on wellness, health, discovery and exploration, which I didn't talk too much about in my article, but I did talk about with Friedman in our interview. It just didn't make the cut for the word count with the article. But Gen Z really highly values trying new things, connecting with small groups, wellness and their health, and that aligns with sober curiosity and a decline of alcohol.
So what was it there that didn't quite make the final cut there?
It was just our discussion with discovery and exploration with Gen Z. I kind of found it hard to wove it into the article. It didn't really have a place among my other interviews. But it kind of goes hand in hand with how Gen Z values wellness and health, which I do talk about in the feature. It just as much as they value the growing wellness trend, Gen Z values exploration and discovery. So that can go from like trying new types of drinks, like the like these zero alcohol like cocktails or like a mocktail, to them wanting to like step away from like bigger groups into like connecting with smaller groups where alcohol necessarily isn't at the forefront of the socialization there.
So this article was something you pitched. What was it that kind of drew you personally to the topic? What interests you about it?
Well, when it was time to do our pitches for February, I always look at Laurier's news alerts just to see if there's anything going on campus or just around Waterloo that would be good to cover. And they have like a feature spot where they highlight if members of faculty or students are featured in other kinds of media outlets. And that's where I found Melise Panetta's article with The Conversation. It just seemed very interesting, and both authors were from Laurier, so I thought like they would be interesting to interview and like ask why they chose this topic and like their findings. So that's what really drew me to it. And then I found it more and more interesting when I had to make it a larger scale feature piece. It was interesting to talk to my two interviewees, and then also I interviewed a student. So it was interesting mm-hmm. to like see her perspective as well.
I was actually going to ask about that. How do you go about the process of finding students to interview when you're looking for something for a piece like this, where you want a kind of a human to give their perspective about something they're kind of part of?
Yeah, for sure. I've been at Laurier for 4 years. So usually when I have to find a student perspective for an article, it's pretty easy just to ask around like friends and classmates, like, hey, do you know anybody who fits this topic and who would be willing to talk to me for this interview? But for this trend, I do not have any friends or acquaintances who are sober curious. So it was a little harder to just, I didn't want to just go around campus and be like, oh, are you sober curious? Talk to me. So I did some research actually to see if like Laurier had a sober movement club, anything like that, to see if I could talk to anybody. And I came across an article on her campus, Laurier, by Kayla Banning, called Being the Only Sober One at Events. And throughout her article, she just talks about her experience being the only sober one at events. She just goes into how she navigates that and some pros and cons she's felt. So I actually reached out to her on Instagram. I found her Instagram and just DM'd her and said, would you be like interested in meeting with me for this article? And yeah, we met up and had a phone call, and she just talked about her experience being sober curious, any advice she has for people who are thinking of like transitioning into sober curious, and like overall her experience and perspective not drinking in a university setting where drinking is very normalized and almost encouraged.
Mm-hmm. And I think this conversation kind of has maybe like a specific emphasis or a different flavor when it comes to Laurier, because Laurier is kind of, it's known for, you know, it's parties, the St. Patrick's Day, the homecoming on Ezra or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like Laurier students in particular have like a different approach to this that doesn't follow the trend, or like it has a different kind of significance maybe here?
I guess it's hard to say just for Laurier, maybe just university students as a whole. I do think it would be a lot more difficult if you were thinking of being sober curious and like trying that out to reduce your drinking. I could see how it would be a lot harder than if you weren't in university, because a lot of social aspects in university revolve around drinking. I do think Laurier would be a little harder than a school that doesn't have such like a big student life and like big student nightlife. Yeah, but it was interesting to see what Kayla said. She was saying that all of her friends, like, well, I don't know about all of, but majority of her friends drink, and she still goes out with them. They just know she's the sober one. She's usually the DD. She says that she always has a drink in her hand so she doesn't feel like too left out, and it's a Dr. Pepper. And she just advises people who are in university and want to try out a sober curious thing to have a drink that they want to drink at a party, just so that they don't feel like inclined to take drinks from people who are offering.
Mm-hmm. So this was, as we've been saying, the feature piece this month. How would you describe the kind of difference in approach when you're writing the feature for the month versus when you're just writing a normal piece?
Yeah, the feature, you go into it knowing that you have to hit like a larger word count than you would with a normal piece. I would say for other articles, you try to sit within like the 400 to 600 range, and then that'll be edited out depending on like layout or like content. And it also depends on the section you're in. But yeah, going into the feature piece, you just know that you are going to be hitting a lot more information than you would with just a regular article. And in a sense, that gives you more freedom because you can cover a wide range of topics and you can have more in-depth interviews with the people that you're interviewing. It just gives you more like leeway, and it can seem a little scary at first going into it, knowing like I got to fill out a whole page spread with this topic and I don't even know where to start. But I find that every time I write a feature piece, it just kind of unfolds itself. You start having one interview and then they tell you something that you can like chase that lead and then have another interview, and just a bunch of new information comes out that you're able to use for the piece. And then you have a bunch of content and you compile it into one cohesive story.
Mm-hmm. If you could lean in just like a little bit, no worries. It's interesting because approaching it in that way makes it feel very familiar, probably for anyone in university who's had to deal with essays and word counts and stuff like that, because I think everyone's familiar kind of, or most people are probably familiar with the fact that like, when you really kind of go in on a topic, sometimes it can be a lot harder to hit the upper word count than it can be to hit the bottom one, because of the exact kind of phenomenon you're talking about. If you're talking about something you're interested in, once you hit one thing that relates to that, it'll give you more sources, or it will bring up more questions that you can explore and cite and add to the thing that you're producing. Would you say that that kind of experience as a student, that experience as a journalist, are kind of similar in that way?
Yeah, I would say they definitely are. I feel lots of times I'm approaching essays and articles and features all with the same like strategy. I do think that being in English has helped me with my article writing, and I do think that writing with the chord has helped me with my essays. I do think that they go hand in hand, and usually what I tell volunteers or people who are thinking of joining the chord is it does feel like it's very similar to your school assignments. If you like writing and you like essay writing, then writing articles would be a good fit for you, because it's kind of the same gist. You just get a little bit more leeway in the sense where, like, you don't have to follow, like academic, like guidelines. You can kind of talk freely.
Mm-hmm. What for you makes, like, a good article, since there isn't that kind of, like, hardcore follow MLA intro, body, closing kind
of
thing?
Yeah. For me personally, it first starts with a topic that I'm interested in. I like writing for the chord, but there have been some times where you're just assigned an article that you really have no interest in, but it's got to get done. So I would say it starts with having a topic that you're really interested in. And then the content flows. You start uncovering more and more to talk about. And it's just kind of cool to see it all pieced together once you have, like, all your information and then all your interviews. And then you just kind of sit down and you piece them together and you see what outcome you get.
So you closed the article that we're talking about this month kind of talking about all the different things that you've mentioned today that influence the way that people are transitioning towards sober curiosity, the financial aspects, the social aspects, these kinds of things. And you kind of close with this statement about how it probably represents this cultural shift that's going to be seen like for a while to come across generations. If you had to make any kind of prediction about where this kind of movement of sober curiosity is going to go in the future and the impacts that it's going to have, do you have any?
I asked this exact question to Melise Panetta and Noah Friedman in their interviews, just because I was interested to see what they said as well. And both kind of gave a vague answer, which I'm about to do myself too, because it's kind of hard to say concretely if it's going to happen, because it's also an individual answer. From my research and just from my like personal opinions, I would say yeah. I think people's alcohol consumption is going to decline among the later generations, just because we are seeing a growing wellness trend. We're seeing a lot more concern for health. We're also seeing new like types of drinks coming out, like a mocktail or like these creative kinds of drinks that still make it fun to have a night out without the alcohol aspect. The only contrasting point I would make to that is trends are trends. So if we see on social media in 10 years that we're moving away from this wellness shift back into like a non-wellness movement or less of an interest or concern around wellness, then there might be more of a spike of drinking. But it also is a very individual decision, and it's very much seems like it's very much dependent upon current trends and environments.
Well, thank you very much for sitting down with me today.
Of course, thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you.